Well, if I could have your attention, we'll get started with our next session. The overall theme of this one is Medicaid issues facing the state in 2017. Some of the things the administration may be planning. We have three presenters today with us. For Greg Moody is the director of the Office of Health Transport. Greg Moody is the director of the Office of Health Transformation for the governor's administration. Mr. Moody began his public service career as a budget analyst for the U.S. House Budget Committee before moving on back to Ohio and being executive assistant in Governor Taft's administration for Health and Human Services. He was also a senior consultant at Health Management Associates prior to joining the Kasich administration. Also with us is State Medicaid Director John McCarthy, who has worked throughout the Kasich administration on Medicaid and served as Medicaid director for the District of Columbia before that, and also as a senior consultant on Medicaid issues for several different states. And since Director McCarthy has announced that he is leaving that position next month, the incoming director the governor has named is former State Representative Barbara Sears, who now works for the Office of Health Transformation and was very active in the legislature on Medicaid issues and, in fact, chaired the Joint Medicaid Oversight Committee. So now I will turn things over. And just before I do, I just wanted to let everyone know, right around the corner in that little doorway is a coffee break materials. If you want something to drink, coffee, soda, whatever, or a little snack, it's right over there. You can walk in and walk out while we're having this presentation. So thank you very much.
Well, I'll start. My name is Greg Moody. I'm the director of the Governor's Office of Health Transformation. I can vouch for the coffee. It's very good. So help yourselves, and we'll breeze through this pretty quickly and then open it up for discussion, because I think some of the most useful time is if you have some specific questions, we want to make sure we're available to you. We're very lucky in Ohio to have tremendous leadership in this space. John McCarthy, I think, is nationally recognized as, well, just one of the best Medicaid directors in the country. And as John has gotten us on a firm foundation, we have one of the best legislators in the history of Ohio, Barbara Sears, who knows these programs inside and out and taking over as Medicaid director starting in January. So we're really lucky to have that kind of leadership here. I'm going to cover some high-level issues. 6 years into this, there are aspects of these programs that continue to overwhelm me in their complexity. So the objective here is to not get into every little detail, but to share some of the headlines of the issues we're working on. So then if those tie to some of your interests, you know who to contact if you want more information, because we want to be as open to you as possible on these issues. It's an interesting moment in time, because as we're thinking ahead to Ohio's strategies around keeping our citizens well, making sure they have access to health coverage, making sure they have supports to get a job and up and out of poverty, there's a lot of federal change going on right now. There is a clarity of purpose in repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, but exactly what form that takes continues to be unknown. So we are carefully monitoring who is being identified for leadership there. Just yesterday, it became clear that the HHS director is going to be U.S. Representative Tom Price. And the head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in Washington is an individual named Seema Verma. Those are individuals who our team knows and has contact with. So over the next few weeks, we'll be in contact with them trying to understand where they're headed. The what, it's clear that folks want to repeal Obamacare. The question seems to be on the timing of that and what would be used to replace it. 20 million Americans received coverage under the Affordable Care Act, and there's a real reluctance in Congress to pull that out from under those folks overnight. So what would a replacement look like? What time frame would that be on? All of that becomes very important. We want to position Ohio as best we can. We have always operated under a set of fairly conservative guiding principles. The governor committed to these principles as he was running for governor, and throughout our administration, we've relied on these to shape all of our policy decisions. The very first one here is the most important. Reset the basic rules of healthcare competition so the incentive is to keep people as healthy as possible and hold down the total cost of care. A lot of what we've identified as wrong with the system is because the system pays a fee for every single service, the incentive is to always provide more service without necessarily keeping a person healthy. So can we change how we pay to create a financial incentive to keep people well and hold down the total cost of care? Everything else I'm going to talk about, some way or another, relates back to that core priority. How do we reward personal responsibility? How do we make information about price and quality transparent? How do we transform primary care to a system that keeps people well instead of only activating after somebody's sick? And where there is chronic disease, which is very expensive, how do we ensure we get the right care at the right place at the right time to hold down those costs and keep people as well as possible? So these principles are what then have shaped our areas of policy focus. Now here's where I'll just mention some headlines. Each one of these items was a major legislative initiative enacted with votes in the House and Senate. So these are examples of the kinds of issues that you're going to be asked to vote on. When we first came into office, we had a budget crisis. The state was $8 billion in the red, and the Medicaid program was growing almost 10% every year. Now, Medicaid is that portion of the state budget that is a federal state program that provides health insurance coverage for the lowest income citizens. So clearly, growing 10% a year was not sustainable. So we immediately set about some reforms to hold that down, and over the course of the time have been able to hold annual spending growth to about 3% growth. Now, the program has grown because more people came onto the program, but the overall spending growth has been managed very well. How did we do that? It was through things like integrating Medicare and Medicaid benefits. Medicare for seniors who need long-term services and supports, which if they're poor, is paid for by Medicaid. Those were two totally separate systems. We brought those systems together to make sense. Rebuild community behavioral health system capacity. It used to be that county boards were responsible for the entire cost of providing behavioral health services to people without access to coverage. Now, because we extended Medicaid coverage, access to mental health and drug addiction services is available to adults through the Ohio Medicaid program. Enhancing community developmental disability services, which is still a county-based system, improving Medicaid managed care plan performance, and then extending Medicaid coverage to more low-income Ohioans. We made a decision in 2013 to extend Medicaid coverage to childless adults below 138% of poverty. We've covered about 650,000 additional Ohioans who previously had no access to a stable form of coverage. When they were sick, they had to get their care in the emergency room, which was then a cost somebody else was paying for. So getting those folks into a stable source of coverage has then had a number of additional benefits and prevented some of the cost shifting that was occurring prior to extending that coverage. Okay, so here's a cluster of issues around modernizing Medicaid. As we were working on some of those issues, it became clear that we were often working at cross purposes. We have a lot of different departments: aging, health, addiction services, mental health. The governor had an insight that all of that needed to be coordinated together. He created the Office of Health Transformation specifically to make sure that all of those agencies work together. We took that a step further then, and in some cases, consolidated departments that had been separate. We had separate mental health and addiction services. Now we have one Department of Behavioral Health Services. Medicaid, which is our biggest program, was buried as a division in another department. We elevated that to be a standalone department. So in this territory, it was basically getting our own house in order to be more efficient. All of these changes are now in place. And then really, this is where the governor has always had his priority. We had to modernize Medicaid and get that program under control because spending was out of control, and now it's in control. We could be more efficient as a state, just do better with what we had. That was streamlining. But really, this was to get our house in order so we could then reach outside of the government programs to commercial health insurers and say, look, we have a common interest here. We're currently paying in a way that's driving volume without it getting any real benefit for that, this fee for every service. What if we aligned how we pay to reward keeping people healthy and holding down the total cost of care? And we received a real positive response from all the insurers here. More than 80% of the state's population is covered by Anthem, Aetna, Medical Mutual, United, CareSource, Molina, Paramount, Buckeye. Another important thing here is that for our Medicaid program, which used to be a solely government-run program, we essentially repealed that old government-run program and replaced it with private sector health plans. So Medicaid is now administered through Paramount, Buckeye, United, Molina, and CareSource. So here we have a group of payers in both the public and private sector who cover most Ohioans who have agreed we need to change how we pay to get better results. And the priorities there are a better version of comprehensive primary care, not just seeing folks for 5 minutes as they're sick and running them through because you're billing fee for service, so you're on this treadmill. But what if you paid in a way that you spent more time with people who had more need to be able to keep them well? So we have an agreement now to start changing how we pay to financially reward primary care practices that keep people well and hold down the total cost of care. And then when something really bad happens, joint replacement, some high cost episode of care, what we've done is identified a way to evaluate performance at the provider level so we can refer individuals to providers that are providing the best value. And we're rolling that out with the participation of all these commercial insurers. What I just described puts Ohio at the front of the country in terms of innovation in being able to generate a healthcare payment system that's driving toward value instead of volume. So as we have one eye on Washington thinking about the changes that are coming, we are wanting to preserve the gains we've made related to shifting toward this value-based reimbursement. I actually think it's going to be very popular for the new administration. It's a basic conservative idea that you calibrate markets to do what you want them to do. It used to be generate volume. Well, we're just shifting over to generating value. So hopefully this work will be able to continue into the future. So with the paying for value, it has several aspects. I won't go into detail here, but the bottom line is we are now able to generate performance reports across payers at the individual provider level. So on the left here, we generate a primary care performance report so folks can see how they're doing compared to their peers. And then we generate a specialist performance report. Think of total joint replacement as an example that shows how that specialist is doing compared to their peers. Then we create a referral report. So the primary care provider, if they have a patient who needs a referral for joint surgery, instead of just leaving that up to chance, they have information about value so they can make a referral to get that person to the highest value provider, improving outcomes, holding down the total cost of care. So this is exciting territory. It's something I'm sure we're going to be talking about during your tenure. Again, right now it's a headline. It's not intended to get down into the detail, but hopefully it may stimulate some additional questions that you might have. Okay, what is our current context and how all this fits together? I mentioned that when we came into office, Medicaid growth was unsustainable. If you look at the red line here, that's the 8.9% trend growth that we inherited when the governor came in his first year as governor. That, we believed, was clearly unsustainable. So we implemented a set of reforms that bent that trend line down to 3% growth. So you can see the blue line there is trending well below that red line, essentially saving taxpayers all of the money in that red region. From that position, we believe the program was stable enough that we could extend coverage to more Ohioans. So then the blue line curves up because we were covering more people. The green dotted line at the top is the actual new people who came onto the program. So you can see a pretty big one-time bump in the program. Now we intend that to stabilize and level off again because it was a one-time adjustment in the program. What I would point out is that we extended coverage to more people in a budget that is below the original trend line without extending coverage to any more people. So we have viewed this as a pretty significant success. And within that, you will learn there are two components to Medicaid spending: the money we get from the federal government and the money we raise from taxpayers in Ohio. The dark blue is the money we raise from taxpayers in Ohio, which has been held essentially flat over this entire period of time. The expansion was primarily paid for through additional federal dollars. Now, over time, the state share of that goes up slightly, and you'll see in the budget that comes to you in January that shift starts to occur. The state share of that is ultimately 10%. Okay, so the point here is the coverage expansion brought more people into the program. It's about 3 million Ohioans currently. It's about 30% of the population in most rural counties receives health coverage through the Medicaid program. And it was done without any additional load directly to Ohio taxpayers, although we are all federal taxpayers, and that top line cost is reflected there. Okay, so in one picture, we wanted to try to provide kind of an overall view of our financial status. Now, John McCarthy is going to go into a little more detail about how the program actually works, but hopefully this level sets as a starting point. Okay, going into the budget, several priorities. I'll just stop here, John, and let you maybe pick up on this panel.
Good afternoon. As Greg said, I am John McCarthy. I'm the current Medicaid director for the state of Ohio and have been lucky to have been in this role for 6 years. So these are some of the budget priorities we have right now: maintain coverage, increase personal responsibility, further improve care coordination, increase access to comprehensive primary care, and that's a big one, reduce infant mortality and the opiate abuse issues, and take care of the managed care tax issue that is before us right now. And those are things you'll be hearing about over time. I got to switch over here. So I will tell you this, it comes up a lot, many times, where I am asked to describe the entire Medicaid program in about 20 minutes. And it is impossible to do. It is a complex program, as Greg was talking about. There's a lot of different pieces. So we're going to hit it at a very, very high level. I do want to say, if you really want to learn a lot more, volunteer to be on the Joint Medicaid Oversight Committee, JMOC. That was started about 2 years ago now. And they really delve into a lot of the issues. I've been able to testify before them. Basically, every month I get to go before them and testify. The joke is they're going to have to change the name now also, because if JMOC, JMOC, some people called it the John McCarthy Oversight Committee, because I was before them so often. So now that Barbara Sears is there, they may have to change those letters. So one thing about the Medicaid program is it's not the Medicare program, okay? So Medicare is for the elderly. It is a federal program. It runs the same way across the United States. The Medicaid program is different. It is run. It is administered by the states with a partnership with the federal government. A part of that, when it said it's administered by the state actually runs the program. The federal government doesn't do it. The state does it. And in each state, you have to designate a single state agency. That single state agency is the one responsible to the federal government. So we are the single state agency. We are the ones that are, whenever something is right, we get the praise. Whenever something is wrong, they come after us, and we have to deal with those issues. The importance of that is this paradox that comes up all the time when there's a discussion around the states are laboratories, the states always do it better. And so, okay, and that's, you know, give states the ability to do more in Medicaid, and that sounds great, which I agree with. There's one issue, though, when this comes up, though, when there's the discussion about Medicare. Whenever that comes up, somehow the federal government can always do it better than the states. Now, I have an issue with that when we talk about one of the populations that we cover currently, and that is individuals enrolled in both the Medicare and the Medicaid programs. So, as I said, it varies by state. Every state's different. If you go to one state, there will be a lot of people who come to you who say, hey, they do this in X state. You guys should just do this in Ohio. Let me tell you, always behind all those stories are something special about that state or something different going on. So not often are things directly able to come across state lines. But that's not to say, and I did this because I was a consultant for 10 years and I was in D.C. As the Medicaid director for two and policy director for three. I brought a lot of those different ideas I've learned in other places to Ohio to make some of the changes. The most basic issue that comes up is how much money you get from the federal government. And the Medicaid program used to be pretty simple. For administrative services, you got a 50% match from the federal government. And then for all services, medical services, there is something called the Federal Medical Assistance Percentage, or FMAP. And there is a formula in law for that, for all the states. The territories and District of Columbia, theirs is different. But for the states, this is what it is. In the state of Ohio right now, we get about 63 cents from the federal government, and 37 cents comes from Ohio taxpayers through the general fund. And that's generally what the program used to be. Now, it has changed dramatically since then. And you will hear a lot about enhanced FMAP rates. So for the Children's Health Insurance Program, the CHIP program, we have an enhanced FMAP. And so right now through the ACA, we get about 93% funding from the federal government. So the state share is very small. For the expansion population, we're at 100% right now. There's also a few other programs in there that have higher matching rates. There is a Money Follows the Person program, which just expired, where we got 100% of the funds from the federal government, which helped us move people out of institutions and back into home and community-based settings, which helped. And we are, and in all of the United States, we are number two. We actually were number two every year, and then we finally passed up Texas. We've moved, the Kasich administration has moved over 8,000 people out of nursing homes, or I should say out of institutions, back into the community for a total of 9,000 people if you go back from once the program started. So why is this FMAP formula important? It's because as the economy changes, right, this is really going to impact the Medicaid program in either direction. We're happy when the federal percentage goes up, we're not so happy when it goes down. And so what is this formula? People will often ask, well, John, just ask them for more money. Get them to give you more. Why are they doing this to us? Well, it's based on a three-year rolling average per capita income data for each state and the United States. So you see here how this works is that as you do better as a state, the amount of money that you put in as a state goes down. And the Medicaid statute sets forth how a state and federal share of Medicaid costs are to be calculated. It's a very simple formula, and you see it right here. The state share equals the square of a state's per capita income divided by the square of the U.S. per capita income multiplied by 0.45, and the federal share is 100% minus the state share, maximum being for a state share of 50%. So here's the formula that you see. So it is just don't go to the new director Sears and say, you know, can't you just get that FMAP change, right? That's not how that works right now. That is set in statute, and this is what it is. So the most of states, so the richer states like Connecticut, they're a 50-50 match state. So they put up 50% of the cost. We're putting up 37% of the costs. New York is a 50-50 state. The importance of those things is when the feds are going to be looking for money in certain areas, there's been discussions around block grants, changing this formula. If you actually just didn't have that limitation on the formula, Connecticut would be paying about 83% of the cost for this. So that just shows you how much there's a limitation around here. I will say what this also brings, and I said we're the single state agency and it's a state-administered program, this is also where, though, the feds step in and say, hey, wait a second, but we're putting up in the state of Ohio 60-some percent, so we get a say in some of these things. Of course, we fight back and say, no, we're putting up our state share, so that's one of the issues. So we are the Ohio's largest health payer, and we used to be, many years ago, a single-payer system. We run a claims processing system. We still have some fee-for-service. You will hear a lot from nursing homes. They love the fee-for-service system. What does that mean? They send claims to us. We process those claims and then send them the reimbursement for that. So I run a $23 billion agency, and I've got 576 staff. I will tell you, that is why I like managed care. Because our managed care partners in the private sector, they help us do the oversight of the program. You see, we have over 83,000 hospitals, nursing homes, and other providers delivering services to over 3 million people, and about 2.4 million people are in managed care plans right now. These charts are some of the most important charts you'll see about the Medicaid program, and the importance I'll get into in a little bit. But these are the people who are enrolled in the program. And so this is average month. This is from 2016, state fiscal year 2016, the average monthly enrollment by population. You see down at the bottom that what we have here is our what we call children and families, CFC, modified adjusted gross income. That's what MAGI stands for, children. So children make up 41% of the program. Their parents, so under the old eligibility criteria, we covered parents to 90% of the federal poverty level. That would be that 18% that you see up on the chart here. In the past, we did not cover childless adults. And I will tell you, when I hear people will come to me and say, yeah, okay, but this person here, they're 50-some years old, and this was pre-expansion, they're 50-some years old, and they have kids, but their kids, of course, are now 25 years old, so why can't they get in? They're not childless adults. No, our definition of childless adults means you don't have a dependent child living with you at the time. So pre-expansion, you would have this group here, MAGI children, the parents, which we covered to 90%. You see, then we have duals. Duals make up 7% of the population. Those are people enrolled in both Medicare and Medicaid. You see then we have age-blind, and ABD stands for age-blind and disabled, so we have age-blind and disabled children are 1% of the population, age-blind and disabled adults are 5%, we have 5% or other, and then you see the expansion population, that's it's group 8 is what's on here because it's group Section 8 of the Social Security Act. They make up 23% of the overall population. Now let's look at those same populations, but by cost. So here, look at this. So this is by total dollars. Remember that duals population I talked to you about before, the Medicare, Medicaid population? They account for 27% of our total expenditures. And remember, Medicare is paying for all of their hospitalizations, physician costs, and things like that. So this is their long-term services and supports costs. That is a population there that I have always been concerned about, and we actually are entered into a demonstration project, which we could do through the ACA, where we actually have those individuals in managed care plans where you've taken Medicare and Medicaid and you put them together into one. So one plan is doing both benefits. There are still issues around that. So in the Medicare program, people can opt out of managed care. Not only can they opt out, but they can opt in and out every month. So that's an issue because we can't keep people locked in. So that's one of the issues that pops up. You see here then for some of the other populations, those ABD children, they were 1% of the population, they're 10% of our costs, the ABD adults are 10% also, and then you see the other groups in there. But the point of this chart is the age, blind, and disabled population is nearly 50% of our overall costs, and yet they're the small portion of people. The other people are relatively inexpensive. Now let's take that same populations and look at not we leave the federal share out now, we just look at the state share, how much it costs us from the Ohio General Fund to cover these individuals. You see duals goes up to 37%. One of the other things you see on this one, which is pops out quite a bit, is the fact that on this chart, Group 8, that's the expansion population, accounts for 22% of our costs. But in this one, they account for 0%. So there's no state dollars going to cover them. You see the other populations in there. Two ABD children is 6%. The ABD adults are 14%. So this gets back to the chart that Greg was showing before. And when you're talking about Medicaid and you're saying the expenses to the program, you have to be looking at all of these different pieces. It's not just a one-size-fits-all. It's which dollars you're talking about when you're looking at growth within the program and how much is being spent in certain areas. So that's a real high overview of the Medicaid program. And now we will take some questions.
Would the state of Ohio be advocating for them to stay in the managed care program year-round?
So for the duals population, I have had a number of tough fights with the current administration. I've also talked to the Ohio delegation around this issue. I believe that a person who's dually eligible for all other populations, we can mandatorily enroll somebody into managed care, where you have to, you can only be served through managed care. You can't opt out into fee-for-service. We also have, for our rest of our managed care populations, you make a selection once a year, and you're with that plan for the whole year. Unless there is something that has come up, then we let a person would switch. So there are circumstances where we let people change. And I'll give you an example that happened. One of our health plans made a major change to their network after the open enrollment period. And so a number of people were upset about it. It was actually around pharmacy. And so we opened it back up. I punished that plan. I said, hey, you know what? We're going to reopen, redo open enrollment for just that plan and let people make a choice. So we have those abilities to do it. In the duals program, I would say, and this is a federal decision, not a state, that yes, people should be treated the same way. Because remember, in my opinion, because I'm the Medicaid director, government is paying for 100% of that individual's health care costs.
I'm going to be selfish, though. The state would probably save money if we pushed the cost toward Medicare.
So, program, that's what would happen. So the way the program's set up, it's actually this. This is an interesting fact. And that when Medicare saves money, when they get people out of the hospital faster and into a nursing home or back into the community faster, it saves them money, but it costs us money. When we do things poorly, and so we have low quality nursing homes and people end up in the hospital more, it costs Medicare more and it saves us money, right? So the part of the program is a managed care, and we have two cap rates. And what Medicare said was, they would just automatically give us a 1% discount on our cap rate. So we automatically just saved 1%. We then get to share in 50% of all the savings that go to the Medicare program under the duals program. So that has really been what we're focusing on, the care coordination around that. And we've been seeing some good results around that. Good question?
Yeah, I saw your chart on the expense chart. It stopped at 2016. Have you projected out the next biennium? 18 and 19, do you have those numbers?
So that is a part of the budget process, and so, yes, we do have those numbers.
And do you expect any changes from the feds that would change that? Or is that all? Do you know what the changes will be?
Ah, that's a good question. We don't know what they are, obviously, because we don't know where the Trump administration is going to come in on certain things. You know, I will say this. I've worked in Medicaid for over 20 years now. I was a part of the block grant fight in 1995. I teased Wayne Struble about it. I was working for the state of Arizona at the time. Changes like that don't come quickly at the federal government. It's not like they'll all of a sudden make a change and say it's going to be in, and let's just make it up, March of 17, right? It takes a while to implement certain things. So how we are looking at the issue is pretty straightforward, and that is we are going to be budgeting on what we know at the time, all the way up to the point where we submit the budget to the legislature. And then we'll have 6 months in there, right, or hopefully less to get the budget approved, of finding out what other issues are coming up so we'll have some better ideas of things going forward. The difficult part in a state like Ohio where you do a two-year budget, the first year for fiscal year 18, a little bit easier to project what's going to happen, a little bit harder for 19. But we've been doing a pretty good job of those things. And so do I see right now anything in there that's going to drive up costs dramatically? Yeah, there is actually, but it's actually in the first year. So Medicare Part D, for all those duals that you see up there and others, there's something called a clawback. So pharmaceutical costs, we saw somewhere between an 11 and 18% growth in our state run, in our Medicaid pharmaceutical costs. Well, the Fed saw it at the same level, commercial seen it. So that all that additional costs come to us. That's gonna cost us an additional $122 million state dollars in fiscal year 18. So that's just Part D clawback. That's just straight up, we gotta pay that. And so, you know, that's a hefty amount of money just that we've gotta pay the federal government. They also have a Medicare Part B increase, which we're doing the calculation right now. Originally, it was gonna be about an additional $35 million that we'd have to pay the federal government for that. So you add those two together, it's about $150 million state share that we're going to have to come up with. And I think that 35 number is coming down. I think it's going to end up somewhere around, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's somewhere around 20 or something like that. So it'll come down a little bit. But those two things right there, I mean, that's a substantial amount of money that just immediately is coming over to us because of just increased costs on the Medicare side. And again, that's for elderly people in the program, right? So. An important factor in that.
Just one last question. Are you allowed to, I'm sure you have for 2018 what Ohio's increased costs would be. Are you able to say that right now? Or is that something like a negotiation that you're talking with the legislature?
Yeah, and there were a couple details in what John was talking about there. You all are going to get used to resetting your clock to the state fiscal year, which runs July 1 through June 30. So we are finishing the fiscal year that will end next June, and then the next state fiscal year will begin July 1 and run for 2 years. Normally what we do is close out the last fiscal year. So when we talk about eligibility or actual spending levels, what we're talking about right now is from June 2016. And now we're in a process where we're proposing things that are going to affect where the budget comes in. But we're going through our own internal process on the executive side, running it through our budget office, getting approval from the governor. So then when we introduce the budget in January, that's when we'll include reprojections of all the numbers. So at that one point, all the numbers reset. So then you'll, at that point, have the most current information we have available. Other administrations have adjusted the numbers as they go along, but I gotta say, when you're seeing a different number for total spending every month, it becomes very confusing. So what we try to do as just a discipline is we close out the prior fiscal year, and then in the budget, we update the next year. Yeah.
With regards to the 10% state share that we're gonna be on the hook for expansion, I guess, could you just summarize what have we been doing to build up to that point? I mean, have we been socking money away, building up to that moment where we have to pay the 10%? Can you describe that? What have we been doing to get to that point?
So I actually should have Barbara Sears answer that question. So the Joint Medicaid Oversight Committee has been tracking that very closely for the last few fiscal years. Where we are at right now in this budget, so in this current fiscal year, the budget that was passed removed all of the state share for Group 8. So we requested about $127 million to cover the state share of Group 8 for this fiscal year. When the budget got over to the Senate took out $150 million state share. They just took it out of our budget. set it aside into another fund called the Health and Human Services Fund. What we said is that we would not go to controlling board again to go get that money, that we would manage the program over these two fiscal years to cover that amount without having to do that. So last fiscal year, we came in $1 billion under budget, and on the state share side, we reverted about $450 million back to the general fund. So if you look at that chart that Greg had up there earlier, right, you have $450 million that we went back. So just from that $450 million, I would make the argument that we can cover the state share of group rate. Now, there's a lot of other things going on, and so I have a close relationship with Director Keene. We talk all the time since we're about half the state budget. This fiscal year, we are currently running under budget again. We have a disbursement estimate, which is $100 million under our appropriated amount. So if you look at last fiscal year, our state share was a negative 3%. So we had budgeted a positive 3%. The year before, the state share growth was plus 3%. Last fiscal year, it was negative 3%. This fiscal year now, we're looking at coming in under budget once again. We're looking at right now projecting about coming in about $350 million under budget, maybe 300, somewhere in there. That's after. The number would be even higher if we actually would have appropriated the $127 million we needed to cover Group 8. Plus, there was another issue with the hospitals that we had to deal with on hospital taxes, which is another $100 million. So we actually started this fiscal year about $250 million in the hole. We covered that $250 million, plus we're going to revert back another $300 and some million. So from our perspective, yes, we have had that money and it's a part of the budget. But Barbara can talk a little bit about that.
Well, so I was just going to add to that comment. You know, as a legislator, the first thing you might be thinking is maybe we simply overbudgeted, and that's the reason why we had the excess. But the fact is that a lot of the initiatives that Director Moody spoke about, we actually realized some savings, and we were able to be more efficient. So we were able to see some of those savings. So it's not just a matter of you set the bar up here and you just lucked into this lower number. It was through a lot of hard work that we did with cooperation with the plans that allowed us to find some efficiencies in it that we couldn't capitalize on during the budget's process initially, that we had to see how they planned out and worked. So think about that as you're looking at some of these initiatives that we've done a lot of work on in budget, in prior budget.
And just one general comment about some of you will remember the governor was the chairman of the House Budget Committee in Washington, and he's always had kind of a very rigorous conservative view about how to do budgeting. So his instruction to us is that these programs need to be sustainable, which we define as not exceeding revenue growth. So that's challenging because in any particular year, revenue growth may be high or low based on what's happening in the economy. And these programs tend to be demanded in reverse to that. If it's a good year, you're collecting a lot of revenue, but you have fewer people on these programs. In a bad year, you're collecting less revenue, but you have more people in these programs. So that tension is something you have to budget for. But as a general rule, what we try to do is keep growth in the Medicaid program at or below overall revenue growth. So for example, in the state GRF, that the average over this period was 2%, that was consistently below the state revenue growth, which means the state share of the Medicaid program was not crowding out other priorities. So in general, that's kind of the basic philosophy, that these programs have to stay within revenue growth.
Maybe if I could just add one more thought for you to consider. About 3-4 years ago, we passed some legislation that instituted JMOC and set that up, the Joint Medicaid Oversight Committee. Within that structure, they hire their own actuary. So they actually have their own actuary come in and test the numbers out. So they test the numbers out. We work on the administrative side to develop the numbers. And then there's sort of a meeting of the minds as we look at both sets of numbers and can either say, well, we both are agreeing on them or we're disagreeing on them. And interestingly, I think both times we've done it, we've been very, very close on the numbers coming up the same. So we're looking at similar assumptions as we're doing some development of the numbers. Now, JMOC is not an administrative process. JMOC is joint legislative. So they are beholden to, that organization is beholden to you as a legislator, not to us as the administration. So they work for you to make sure that you feel comfortable with the knowledge you have so that you can come to look at the Medicaid portion of the budget with as much information as you need.
Director Moody and then Director McCarthy, I want to bridge on Scott's comment. Beck, one of your slides, you're talking about the contracts with the managed care folks. Is that an annual contract? Is it per budget cycle or longer? Currently, I
should say. Yeah. Yeah, no, I made it too high for me. They are... we re-procured the contracts 5 years ago, and they actually don't have an expiration date to them. And there's a reason for that. They're called the provider agreement. And I want to clarify something because I know you'll get people coming to you saying this. The way managed care works in Medicaid is that the rates have to be actuarially sound. And so you have to have an outside certified actuary say, or it could be your own actuary, certify that those rates are good. In the state of Ohio, we are a take it or leave it state. So we are a large state, so we can do this. I set the rates every year at the bottom of the actuarial range and say to the plans, we have five plans and they're statewide. There's five plans and I say, take it or leave it. If you don't like it, walk away because I'll have somebody else that could come in and do it. So I often get the question, well, why don't you just do this and bid it every year because then you'll get better rates? Well, guess what? We won't. The way it works is even if somebody bid below those rates, CMS will not allow those rates to be approved. That's one of those examples where you have to turn something into the federal government. And there's actually a good reason for that because if a plan actually gets rates below what is considered actuarially sound, there's a good chance the plan will just default and go out of business. And then all the other plans have to pay those claims that didn't get paid. So right now we've got five plans that are statewide for the managed care program for children and adults. For the duals population, however, that's only in 29 counties. We've got five plans there. They're all the same except for one. Paramount's not in there, Aetna's in there. And we have two plans per region. I have said one of my goals when I came in under Governor Kasich was to get to 100% managed care by the end of our administration. So that's something that we may or may not propose in the budget, but we're pretty close on that.
As far as fraud detection, are you satisfied with the algorithms and other things you've used? Do you think Ohio is in the middle of best practice or we are up front?
So in fraud, we're number one in catching fraud. So we're always number one or number two. There is in the Attorney General's office, the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. We have an incredible relationship with them. So we're number one with referrals to them and number one or number two, depending on what year it is, on prosecutions. So that's really important that you're catching it and you're getting the prosecution. So we're doing a really good job of that. Now, as always, people ask, well, how much fraud's in the program? If I knew that, I would have zero, right? Because I would get it all out. So you have to constantly be changing things. We're making some changes now. Some of it is as we move. So this is interesting. When you're in a fee-for-service world, it's pretty easy to, well, I shouldn't say easy, but you go get providers and you find out if they're doing fraud and then you recoup the money or you put things on the front end to stop. When you go to managed care, it's a little bit different, right? Because you're not directly paying it. You're at a fully at-risk contract with the managed care plan. So there's one issue you run into is, do you care about fraud or not? Because if there's fraud and it's hitting the managed care plan and their costs go up, it doesn't matter to you because you're at a fully at risk. However, I would say you do care. And that's one of the things that we've been changing is now we're doing more oversight of the managed care plans and then looking into how they're doing their fraud detection. So that's been a shift in the whole organization as we look at this differently and say it is now our job to do that oversight. And we're doing well in there. I mean, we're still number one or number two.
Especially since the AG's FTEs have been flat.
Yeah. And let me say this, and this is something for you also to think about. The fraud that gets 99% of the time, the fraud that people get caught on is provider fraud. People often ask, well, what are you doing about the person fraud, the person that's out there committing fraud using somebody else's Medicaid ID card or something like that? So those prosecutions happen at the county level. It is very hard to get a county prosecutor to prosecute that person for a couple of different reasons. One, let's do pre-expansion. The person was probably poor. The person probably didn't have any money, and they had some. So, and this case has come before me. When I first came, you got a person who actually had cancer, right? They used somebody else's card to go get cancer treatment. That is a tough case to prosecute. Now, they did, you know, we did kick them off the program and have to do other stuff and got them charity care and things like that. But that happens. Every now and then, and you have this case, Senate President Faber used to always get mad at me about, you know, the case of the millionaire on Medicaid, and you would run into one of those cases every now and then around that in various states. And don't walk out of here thinking we've got millions of millionaires on Medicaid. We don't. I mean, it's not something that people are necessarily going to do. Now, a couple of those cases, or I should say there's been one case in Ohio where somebody was prosecuted in that manner, but it's not, I would argue it's not rampant in there.
Are we at our time? Any other questions?
Any more questions? If not, I'd like to thank our presenters very much for coming here today to make these presentations.